Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
Welcome to the episode about video games. Finally something different for everybody out there.
Enough of the sports talk. Now we're going to talk about real stuff.
Exactly. So, first up, I just want to go ahead and give you guys where to find us again, of course. You can go to iTunes. You just type A, the number 2, Z in the search bar. You hit enter. Then you'll scroll down to the podcast section. You hit it, we're the only ones there. You just click download, it downloads to your iTunes, onto your iPod. You're good to go. We're not hard to find. It's really quite simple, and we encourage you to do it that way. Or you can find us online at podomatic.com. To do that, all you have to do is type A, the number 2, Z, podcast, spokane.podomatic.com. That's A, the number 2, Z, podcast, spokane.podomatic.com. That's A2Z podcast spokane.podomatic.com. So that's how you find us. Just tell your friends to look for us on iTunes. It's way easier that way. And we definitely encourage you guys to spread the word about us. And we hope you enjoy what you're getting. If you need to contact us, go ahead and do it at A2Z podcast @gmail.com. It's that simple. Give us an email. We'll write you guys back or include you in our next show. Whatever we see fit. Like we said, today's the gaming episode, so we're going to go ahead and go through some gaming news. We're going to do what you've been playing. We're going to talk a little bit about Rage of Bahamut. We're going to talk about Final Fantasy Airborne Brigade, which are two phone games. Then we're also going to talk about some games we're excited for, and we're going to go ahead and do a little bit of a review on Lord of the Rings War of the North. So, go ahead, hand it over to Zach here and get us started.
All right, so big news this week, huge news, Gen 4 consoles are going to start being announced. It's the PlayStation 4 will be launching by the end of this year. Sony's been teasing this new video, calling it See the Future. The event's going to be on February 20th, so that'll be really exciting to see what it is. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts about, you know, next generation of consoles coming out.
Well, I'm very excited for the PlayStation 4. How could I not be? It's just a little bit disappointing, maybe, to hear about what the new PlayStation is going to be like. It's not so much a upgrade in terms of processing power and just sheer energy of, like, how much more awesome the games are going to be, because it's not going to be a whole lot more than what the PlayStation 3 is.
Yeah, I got the report right here. It's the Wall Street Journal confirms that the new system will be released this year and claims the console will be focused more on social aspects and how the user interacts with it more than strict focus on hardware power. And I agree with you. To me, that's incredibly disappointing. You know, it's the jump between the PS1 to PS2 was mind-blowing, and the PS2 to PS3 again. And if the big hardware things aren't really that important, then, you know, then why are they releasing this? I think that's setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, I'm not really a huge Twitter guy. I'm not a huge Facebook guy. I
don't need to show everybody my gaming or my gaming accomplishments. It's awesome in-game, but I don't know. I mean, I understand, because the YouTube community nowadays has gotten really huge, and like the commentaries with everybody putting their gameplay up and putting voiceovers, kind of like what we're doing over their gameplay, has become insanely popular. And I also enjoy stuff like that, so I see why they're doing that, because that is where it's at currently. And I mean, they're smart to do it that way, because you might be able to just record something through your controller or whatever have you, and then upload it straight onto your YouTube account, so people can have that instant gratification. It's almost like a live stream sort of an aspect, almost, except for not live stream, just almost that instantaneous.
Yeah, some of the things are changing are, like, I've seen reports about biometrics in the controllers, and sources are telling Edge that the controller will feature a share button. The system will reportedly record the last 15 minutes of play. Hitting the button will allow you to quickly share and edit screenshots and videos. And to me, that's a gimmick. It doesn't appeal to me as a gamer. Now, like, Do you think that with if the PS4 starts disappointing hardcore gamers, I mean, a lot of hardcore gamers are already on the PC, but that's where the market is if you're really looking for high-end graphic resolutions and things like that.
You know, it's kind of strange that you bring that up, because I've actually been thinking about making the switch to PC, mostly just in the past few days. I haven't brought it up at all or anything. I've been looking at maybe building my own sort of computer, going that direction, getting the most bang for your buck, because one, the games are much prettier on PC when you can play them full, and two is, like, with the new stuff that's coming out, like you said, it's not really that appealing to me. I don't need to do it, and you said about it not appealing to the hardcore gamers, and, you know, I don't think hardcore gamers make up a whole lot of the market anymore, and the ones that do are kind of switching over to the PC, so it's kind of the way to go now. And I mean, you look at the YouTube people, they have like, you know, a couple hundred thousand subscribers, each one of them, and they get hundreds of thousands of views per video. And that's kind of what they're appealing to, are those hundreds of thousands of people that are watching those videos. And while I do enjoy that, I don't know if I'm going to pay all that money for the new PlayStation when I could go and build a new PC and be able to play games on a much higher visual resolution.
I know, if you've seen any of the screenshots of like Skyrim on a high-end PC, it's remarkable. And it kind of sucks because, like, I've been a console gamer mostly. You know, I've played some PC games here and there, but like, this just doesn't appeal to me. It seems like a gimmick, just kind of like the Wii did. I mean, and the Xbox Kinect and the PlayStation Move, those are all gimmicks. Like, it doesn't matter how, like, the motion control, it's a gimmick, and yet they make tons of money off that, and it's straying away from solid gameplay and awesome games.
You know, like, I mean, all the games that we really enjoy also come out on PC, you know, so it's like, well, maybe I should go to PC. The only ones that I really fret about are is like the Final Fantasy series and stuff like that, which, you know.
Yeah, but when was the last time you were really impressed by the Final Fantasy series?
Right, exactly. And I mean, talking about all this PC kind of leads into the next thing I want to talk about, which was the DayZ game, which is just right now a mod of Arma 2. But it's going to become its own standalone game soon enough. And I think they
kind
of
like how
it
did Counter-Strike with Half-Life. That was a mod, and then they turned it into its own game.
Yeah, so that's what they're going to do. And it's right now it's only PC only. There were, you know, talks about it possibly one day being ported to the consoles, but this game is so ridiculously massive in scale. The load times would be massive. I mean, it's bigger than the Skyrim map by like 100,000 times. It's massive, and you know how the loading times are on Skyrim, and I mean, it's interesting. So that's my main reason of thinking of going PC, because this game is amazing. It's the most realistic game that I've seen. Not to say it's not unrealistic in some aspects, because it absolutely is. But the fact that you have to keep up on how much water you drink or liquid you drink, you have to eat food, otherwise you start losing blood. You know, you carry around bandages to heal yourself after zombies hit you. You have morphine that you inject into yourself. You take painkillers and you try to keep up with your body. You can get cold. You can get sick. You know, you're in the Arctic. If you don't have warm clothes on, your health starts to drop. It's just, it's a really interesting game. And it's something that I've been keeping my eye on. I've been watching a lot of videos. If you're interested at all in DayZ, I highly recommend a person on YouTube. His name is Frankie on PC in 1080p, and he's a British guy.
Yeah, that's a clever
he's an English
name.
Guy. What's that?
It's a clever name.
It is. It's a very clever name. And he's great when it comes to DayZ commentating. He also does Battlefield 3. But I would highly recommend you watch his videos, because he gives you a perfect view of how DayZ is and what it should be. And he plays, obviously, in this alpha stage, or, you know, as they're starting to try to get it into its own standalone game, but it's definitely one to keep your eyes open for, and it's really intriguing to me, and it might be one of the main reasons why I switch to PC gaming here in the future.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you've told me about it, and I've seen some videos, it's really intense, and, you know, it's just one of those games. It's like a hardcore version of The Sims mixed with, like, maybe Left 4 Dead, you know?
Maybe yeah, something that speaks to how good of a game it is right now, like I said, it's just like a piggyback off of Arma 3. It's just a mod. And it has over, like, 800,000 active players on it. And that's just on PC for a mod where you have to buy Arma 2, you have to buy one of the expansion packs, and then you have to buy DayZ on top of that to be able to play it. And that's pretty impressive, 800,000 people for just a little mod for a game. So, I mean, that's kind of why they're going the standalone route, because they see big things with this game, and I can see it too. It's really interesting in the social dynamic characteristics of the game, where you don't know who's friendly and who's not friendly, so people can just shoot you because, you know, you have something of theirs, or you have something that they want, or they can just shoot you just because, and you die and you respawn somewhere else on the map, and you have to do it all over again. So you could be a fully geared out player with all the best gear in the game, and some lowly dude who just started playing with an axe could run up behind you and smack you with an axe, and you're dead, and you restart, and you lose everything. So it's interesting how it works. I mean, there's helicopters and airplanes and motorcycles and cars and stuff, but you have to fix everything. You have to find the parts for them, and it's really interesting game. I'm really excited about it, and I'm definitely thinking about switching over to PC.
Something we just brought up a little bit ago was Skyrim, and the DLCs are finally coming out for the PS3. I mean, it's about time. My brother, who plays this game on Xbox, has had one of the DLCs for months, and now we, as PS3 players, finally get it. Do you think you'll download them?
I'm thinking about it for sure. I definitely enjoy Skyrim. I played it fairly recently. I got back into it, played it a lot. So I think I might get it. I think we're getting the Dragonborn.
Yeah, that's the first one, and I've heard that's the best one because you get to fly dragons.
Yeah, and that comes out the 12th, right?
Yeah, it comes out the 12th, which is good. But I mean, it just really sucks that we got the short end of the stick, even though technical aspect, we have the far superior system comparative to Xbox. I'm not saying the PS3 is better than an Xbox 360. They both do their things, but, I mean, we have Blu-ray, we have a slightly better processor, you know? I mean, it kind of sucks that we got stiff like this.
Yeah, it's also, I've heard, easier to program the games on for the Xbox 360, so it's cheaper, so that's what most game manufacturers do, is they program it on the Xbox 360, and then they port it to PlayStation 3, and then we get poorly done ports, and that's kind of exactly what this was. Mm-hmm. They had an issue with it. I mean, from very day one with Skyrim, there was an issue with the save file growing and growing and growing and causing you to lag so much. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't even get on for 10 minutes.
Yeah, one of my save files is like over 7,000 kilobytes, I mean, which doesn't sound that much, but considering it started at 2000 and then it just keeps building and building and building and building, like, that ends up being a problem. And you're exactly right, you end up in the serious lag, and they've kind of fixed those problems. I'll lag every once in a while, but I mean, I dumped 60 hours into it, like, and I'm definitely ready for more.
Yeah, so I am pretty excited for the Dragonborn DLC. It's about darn time. I mean, my excitement level's kind of dropped off a little bit. If it would have came out, like, in succession with all of the other DLCs, it would definitely be higher, but because we've been let down for so long, it's like, how excited could you get? I mean, I'm as excited as I possibly could for this game, though, or this DLC. And I'm glad they finally got it together and are finally getting us something, so I'm glad.
Yeah, and plus we, because of all the problems we get it at a discount rate. So, you know, that's great.
Yeah, that is, that works for me. Hey, discounts all around.
We're going to kind of move into the what you've been playing segment. We're just kind of going to go through a little bit of the games we've been playing, let you guys know what's been keeping us busy. So, I guess first is the pretty obvious one. We have been playing a ton of Battlefield Bad Company 2. We refuse to move up to Battlefield 3, because we've just, you know, doesn't look that great comparative to how awesome, to me, the best shooter I've ever played.
Yeah, it's true. And if you guys, you know, are playing Battlefield 3 right now and you think we should move on, go ahead and email us and tell us why you think we should move up into the bigger, badder realm of Battlefield 3. I've seen videos of it, and while it does look sharp, there are definitely some things that I don't like about it. You were talking about how you were watching your brother play it, and all he was doing was sitting prone sniping, which, you know, is not a bad thing. That's some people's way to play, but that's one of the things I actually sort of enjoyed about Battlefield 2, was that there was no prone, so it kind of made everybody move around a little bit more. Yeah,
it levels the playing field, you know, like, it just doesn't make it so everybody's laying prone in a hallway sniping you as soon as you come up, because that's, like, honestly one of my least favorite things in all the Call of Duties, is, like, everybody's just prone everywhere, and it's really kind of cheap. It, like, takes something away from the game, and people are like, well, if you were really good, then you'd just be able to stop being such a noob and, you know, play, and it's like, yeah, you're right, but, I mean, Battlefield 2 is a game I'm decently good at. When I want to play really good, I mean, I'll get best player, at least second best to you every time, you know, but it's just an awesome game that we've kind of revisited. There's nothing better than sniping in Battlefield 2.
Like, yeah, I think that it's the game that has the best sniping mechanics that I've ever played, ever.
Because everybody that's really good at sniping in Call of Duty just quickscopes. And if you don't quickscope, then you're a noob. But this game, you line up the headshots. The bullets have a serious drop on them. So you aim a little bit above. You lead a little bit. And when you hit it and you get a headshot, it's a really gratifying feeling, like, to know, like, that it's a little bit of skill in there.
You know, it's definitely been keeping us busy. I just enjoy really everything about that game. I enjoy the class balances. I mean, each class brings something to the table, and, I mean, I score better as a medic, and I think most people probably do, just because you get all those revive points, and it's easy to score high with that, but I can score almost as high as I do with medic with my recon class, and that's saying something. How many games when you're sniping can you score so highly? I mean, I understand Call of Duty, like you said, with all the quick scopers and stuff, you can run around and use a sniper rifle almost as well as you can an assault rifle, but this game, where you actually use the sniper rifle like it's supposed to be used, and you can still score as high as people running around with their SMGs and their assault rifles, and I enjoy that about it.
Yeah, plus all the vehicles in there. Like, you run into people who are, like, way too good and are, like, pros at helicopters, but then they have the class balance in there with all the anti-air guns all over the place, and every time I fly a helicopter, I get shot out of the air, you know?
If you had to pick a class, what would your favorite class be?
It would definitely be assault, just because, like, you know, you get to use the assault rifles, and then you get to use the grenade launcher, or you get to switch it to a shotgun underneath, which is kind of, I'm not the biggest fan. Plus, you get to drop the ammo boxes, and my favorite weapon in the whole game is the M16A2. The 3-round burst, plus it's really powerful. This is my favorite weapon.
Yeah, assault is definitely a good class. I like that you can use the alternate weapons in assault, and you can run around with C4 and stuff. I think C4 is probably one of my favorite weapons in the game, just to run around slapping that on everything and blowing people up. And I love and I hate it at the same time, is the knifing animation. I think it works really well, but at the same time, when it doesn't work for me, I get super frustrated. But it's really gratifying when you get a knife kill, because of the animation is so long that you're like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, it's a bit kind of like a Halo, not a knife, but a Halo, like when you have the plasma sword animation. It's like a lunging, stabbing kind of motion. And when you get it and you lock on and you jump a couple feet and get the guy, it's really, the knifing and it's superb. Plus, like, it doesn't happen. The scope of these levels are perfect. Some of them, like Heavy Metal, might be a little bit too big, but it's really balanced with all the vehicles. And you never feel like, you know, you're just running to run. And talking with my brother a little bit about Battlefield 3, he's like, well, this is a level where you, on defense, you just kind of let them win because, like, it's really, really hard. And on offense, you just have to run for 3 minutes to get to the next place. And that just doesn't seem appealing to me. But I'm not a big... If you ever played it, there's really two modes of fighting. There's the Conquest, which is 3 points are laid, 3 or 4 points are laid around the map, and you have to capture that flag by staying in that point till your team takes over it, and then you have to defend it. Or there's Rush, which is kind of, you are either on attack or defense, and there's 2 points that the attacking team is trying to blow up, and then it progressively gets to different stages. And me and you only usually play Conquest. We'll play Rush every once in a while, but just Rush
Conquest
just doesn't do it for
just
me.
Just lasts longer, and it just seems to be a little more entertaining for me. I can get, you know, a few more kills, a few more revives. Not saying Rush isn't fun, because Rush is fun, but we just seem to end up always playing Conquest, and it doesn't hurt my feelings any. It's almost like it keeps you from having to bash your head against a wall when you're playing Rush, because you only have the two options, and you just have to keep going for it and going for it and going for it, and you die and you die and you die. Mm-hmm. Whereas Conquest, if you go to sea and it's taken and you try to capture it, you get killed, well, you can go to A and capture A. No problem, you know? Mm-hmm. So I kind of like that variety. You kind of can keep the other team guessing, whereas in Rush, if there's only the B objective left, they know you're going for B, so it's not exactly rocket science there.
Exactly. That, and, like, if you don't get to a certain point in Rush by, like, a certain amount of time, then you've automatically lost, and yet you still have to play out the whole rest of the time, and you just waste a lot of time in Rush.
Certainly feel that way. So that's kind of what we've been playing lately, especially together. So we're going to go ahead and move into another topic, and that's kind of phone video games. We've been playing a few, or we were playing a few quite regularly. One that we've sort of teetered off on a little bit is Rage of Bahamut. It's a phone you can get for your iPhone, you can get it for your iPod, iPad, you can get it on Android devices. I mean, you can get it on pretty much anything.
Basically, anything that uses apps, it's an app that you can download. So I recommend it because it is fun, but we're basically going to use this forum to complain about it for the next X amount of minutes.
Yeah, it's absolutely fun.
I guess the basic question is, why did you stop playing?
Because I felt like I was bashing my head against a wall, because I was getting nowhere, I felt like. It's a trading card game. So you try to get cards and build a better deck than the other person. You can attack people. There are events that you can participate in. You get rewards for participating in the event. But in the end of things, or in the end of the game, you want to have the best deck, the more powerful deck than the next person. So you get 5 cards in your deck, and they all require power, so you have to spend points that you earn by leveling up to increase your attack power or your defense power. Once you get a card that you like, you can get more of that same card to combine them together to create a more powerful card. So it's kind of this endless process. The main currency in the game is rupees, but rupees really don't do anything and have been replaced by this stuff called holy powder, which instantly refills your attack power, which you need to use to attack people, or your defense power, which you use to defend attacks with. And so that's what the real currency has become, and that's what you use to trade for cards. And they have different rarities of cards. You know, there's the normal, there's high normal, there's rare, there's high rares, then there's super rares, super super rares, and legendary cards. And the main reason why I stopped playing this game is because I feel like the titles are very misleading. You might get a rare card and you're like, yes, I got a rare card. But really, that rare card is absolutely 100% worthless.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I stopped playing is the absolute hopelessness you get when you play it. I was blessed when I first started playing this game, and I got a super, super rare card that I sold for a lot of in-game currency and was able to slightly build my deck. But I was like a 16-year-old that you gave $100,000 and I blew it and I didn't realize what I had. And it's unfortunate. And then I suffered because I really didn't even have that good of cards to show for the amount of in-game currency that I got. And to me, it's a broken game. Fun, but broken. Ultimately, like, the economy is completely failing in that game because they flood the market with mediumly, like, rare cards, but not that rare. So you can never get a leg up. Plus, the amount of cheating that's in it really disheartens you. Like, you told me some of the top players in the world were banned recently because they had 300 feeder accounts.
And in that game, feeder accounts are kind of everything because they have... like weekly login bonuses sometimes, and it goes on for 2 weeks, or it's actually 10 logins. And once you get to login number 5, you get a card pack,
which gives you a higher rare up card. And then on the 10th day, you get 2 rare card packs. And if you have 300 feeder accounts, you get 900 rare cards, which increases your chances to get super, super rare cards, which is just unfair.
Yeah. I mean, the 900 cards right there, you just said it. That, and then if you, like, I would get 3 cards every 2 weeks, and then that's only 3 holy powders. But if you have 900, like, and that just creates such a feeling of hopelessness.
Yeah, not to mention, you get holy powders from those card packs. So not only can you sell the good cards that you get on the market, you also get holy powders. So those people with that many feeder accounts are way ahead of somebody like me who has 1 account who's trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a good pull like Zach. So the only way you can legitimately make any holy powders in that game is to take rupees, which are not super difficult to get, but when you get low on them, it's kind of a pain. And you have to take rupees and spend rupees to enhance cards, which is to level them up from level 1 to whatever their max level is. So you have to farm really crummy cards to enhance the good cards, and then that costs rupees, and then once you max enhance a card, you can sell it on the bazaar for 2 to 3 holy powder, if you're lucky. And most of the good cards, like for me, I was the gods faction, and for the high rare cards that I was buying, it was like 10 holy powder a pop. So, yeah. I needed 6 cards to make 1 decent card in the end.
Yeah, and for the super elite cards, 1,500 holy powder. And it just really shows you, if anything, it's kind of a microcosm of our real society, you know? People get the leg up, and that's a whole nother thing. I'm just kidding. But, like, it just sucks. Like, when you are playing a game and you're playing it honest, and there's always going to be people who cheat, and I really generally don't have a problem with it, but when it's everybody's cheating that are in the top 10% of the game, then it's like, why play? And then that's ultimately the decision that I made. I stopped playing because, like, it was completely... I mean, I played on my iPad, so luckily I didn't bring my phone to work and was, like, logging on every 2 hours, but it just really sucks, you know, because, like, it's a fun game, but, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, and they don't reward players for how often they play. What they reward players for is how much money you spend to get holy powders. So someone like me, who was playing a lot, still wasn't getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody who just came in and spent $100 would get a bunch of holy powders, and then they would be set. I mean, I participated in the events heavily, and I still couldn't get hardly any good cards.
What was the highest
rank? High rares.
Yeah. What was the highest you ever ranked in an event?
It was the Christmas event, and I ranked in at like 3,600 or something like that. And the Christmas event, a lot of people did not participate in at all.
Yeah.
So most events, I place in like the 20,000s.
Yeah, and you were a top 4,000 player, and you were literally like every 2 hours logging on to play.
Yeah, I was constantly playing, and it's because I don't have very many holy powder, which is like what I was saying. They reward people who have holy powders. If you have holy powders, you get on for an hour, you use a couple hundred, and boom, you're rank number 20, and you get awesome cards. You sell those for, you know, you make 1,000 holy powder on that awesome card, and then you just do it again. Whereas me, I played my butt off in that, and I got a card. The super rare card that I got was selling on the bazaar for around 4 Holy Powder.
And that's just,
super,
I mean,
rare card.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, what can you do with that? So I guess that's ultimately why we stopped playing. But the same company who makes that game makes a slightly different version, but with a Final Fantasy twist called Final Fantasy Airborne Brigade. This is another app game. It's in the same vein. Like, instead of cards, you collect weapons and spells. So it's very similar, but it's another fun game. But, I mean, I just kind of got so burnt out from Bahamut that I kind of stopped playing Airborne Brigade, too.
Yeah, I mean, I still play Airborne Brigade. Not often. I mean, my phone is always sending me those push notifications saying, hey, your brigade needs you to attack this guy.
Yeah.
And this game definitely gives you more hope than Rage of Bahamut, and it also has way less players, but that's also in the sense that it doesn't have 300 feeder accounts per person.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a little bit better. I mean, it's very redundant, just like Rage of Bahamut. You're always doing the same stuff. It's just pretty much button mashing. And I don't mind grinding if it gives you something, but in a lot of these games, you don't really get a whole lot. And, you know, in true Final Fantasy, they have chocobos, and chocobos give you abilities. And they usually, there's like yellow chocobos, there's black chocobos, there's white chocobos, and now there's an event currently happening where there are red chocobos also. And the yellow ones, they just give you like normal abilities or normal pluses. Then the black chocobos can give you super rares, but the chances of them dropping a super rare are 0.01%. So that's very unlikely. Same with the whites. They give you more super rare abilities, but their chances are very slim. And then the red chocobos are pretty much just like white chocobos, but just for this event. So, I mean, I've gotten more rare stuff than I ever had in Rage of Bahamut. But, I mean, it's still a little bit disheartening. I mean, I've gone through like 800 red chocobos and haven't gotten a single thing.
Yeah.
So.
Like, I set a goal for myself to unlock the Dragoon class, and I did. And then kind of once I got there, then I was like, well, what am I really playing this for? And I kind of stopped. Like, it's fun. Like, if I were to recommend one or the two, I'd definitely recommend Final Fantasy over Rage of Bahamut.
Over Rage, but that's because Rage right now is kind of broken. And I've heard that Rage was much, much better of a game before we started playing, because they had a different economic system. They didn't have the bazaar, and it was mostly just based on player trading, but then players were getting exploited. Like, newer players would get rare cards, and then higher level players or more experienced players would be like, oh, that's not that good of a card, I'll give you this crummy card for it. And they'd say, oh yeah, they'd do it.
Oh, thanks for helping me accounts. Out.
Yeah, or their accounts would get hacked into, and then the player would trade all their cards to the account that they own, and then the player that got hacked would log in and see that they had nothing left. So now, you can't even trade with people in Rage of Bahamut unless you're friends with them for 2 weeks.
Yeah, real life
ridiculous.
Weeks.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So you, real life weeks, and it's like you're trying to get rid of a card. You can't sell it on a bazaar, but you find somebody that will trade cards with you, and then you have to wait 2 weeks, and by the time you're ready to get that card, you're like, well, I could have saved up the Holy Powder to buy that card, no problem. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's broken, whereas Airborne Brigade isn't. It's still pretty fun, but like you said, you got your Dragoon class, and then there's nothing left to do. It's not like a true Final Fantasy game where there's tons and tons of, like, endgame crap to do, and,
yeah.
You know, grinding to get the ultimate weapons. And like in Final Fantasy X, to get Lulu's ultimate weapon, you have to dodge 200 lightning strikes in a row on the lightning plane, on the thunder
I don't think
planes.
There's anybody in the history of the world who ever did that. Like,
I did that. I sat down and I did that. It took me, I turned off the lights in my room and I just sat there and I did it.
Yeah, I think the company that makes it just use the all like the Final Fantasy items, you know, like elixirs and potions, and then he uses the classes and I mean it's cool, and but it's not a real Final Fantasy game. A real Final Fantasy game is Final Fantasy 14. They will be releasing the 2.0 version of that this spring. And now this game, I never played the original version because I heard just how terrible the original was, so I didn't even bother buying it. But I am getting sucked in. 2.0 has got its hooks deep in me.
You keep telling me about it, and you keep telling me to check it out, and I've checked out a few things about it, and I never got into 11 all that much, but that's because I was living, you know, in the Middle East, and, like, you couldn't get internet there fast enough to play it. We had dial-up, and obviously you can't play 11 on dial-up.
Yeah,
so.
See, and I played 11 twice. I played it when it first came out, and I was really young, and that was my first experience into an MMO, and it blew my mind that there was games, like, out there like this. Like, I'd never been, and I sucked. I was terrible. I think it took me, like, 60 hours just to get to, like, level 30. And then when I played through it a second time as an adult, like, I understood how MMOs worked, and I understood group dynamics, and it really helps you work as a team. And I grind my way to 30 in less than 10 hours. And I got the class that I wanted, and I played it, and I played that all the way through. And the story was a bit lacking in 11. I just never got into it. As I did with other Final Fantasies, but man, it's an awesome game. And I mean, the community for 11 is still going strong. And actually, 14 just hired the 11 crew to come in and basically make 14 into 11, which, I mean, I'm okay with that. Like, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I'm sure the story in 14 will probably be lacking in just terms of sheer Final Fantasy-ness. I mean, just lately, the stories have been lacking, in my opinion, anyways, and just the fact that it's the MMORPG version of it and stuff, I just don't think it's really going to be there. But that's not to say I'm not going to log a ton of hours into this game, because I have a feeling if it's any good at all, we're going to play the crap out of this game, just like we did Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, we're going to be able to play it on the PS3, which is awesome. MMO on the PS3, I could get a wireless Bluetooth keyboard, hook it up, and then just sit back and enjoy, you know?
Absolutely.
Doing the beta signups for it now, and if you are signed up for the beta, I'd love to hear what you're saying. I've been reading quite a bit of the forums, but those are like true fanboys with no matter what Square Enix does. They're just like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing ever. And some of the farming and mechanic system looks a little bit grindish to me, like you're just going to have to grind it out, which is fine, but I think we kind of got spoiled with how the farming and the all the crafting is in Old Republic, which to me is one of the best I've ever played.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it in the Old Republic, where you just could set it, and some of the missions would take hours, and you just set it when you log out, you log back in, and bam, all your stuff is farmed and ready to go. You can build your stuff. It was awesome. I really enjoyed that aspect. And I feel Final Fantasy XIV is going to end up being a good game, because it was a debacle when it very first originally came out. It was an absolute disaster. And, I mean, Square Enix isn't going to want to tarnish their name terribly with this, and they're not going to want to put out a crummy game. So, I definitely feel like A Realm Reborn is going to be a good game, and I can't wait to play that. Kind of down the same vein again is Kingdom Hearts 1.5. That's set to release in Japan on March 14th. So, that means we're one step closer to getting 1.5 here in the U.S., which I'm excited about because I absolutely love Kingdom Hearts. It's one of my favorite games I've ever played. 2 was still good, not as good as 1, I thought, but, you know, 1.5, you get 1 and then all the...
Yeah, the Game Boy ones.
Handheld versions.
Yeah, see,
so.
I never played any of the handheld versions, so I'm missing out. So I am legitimately excited to play... Now, I shouldn't say I'm a Kingdom Hearts fan if I never played those handheld ones, but handheld gaming, I kind of stopped with that when, like, I kind of started moving more seriously towards the consoles. But...
I think, too, dude, is that here in the U.S., we're not much of a handheld gaming community anyways. I mean, absolutely, like, young kids play Pokemon, but as compared to Japan, where, like, everybody is into their handheld gaming, that's what most of the Kingdom Hearts were made for, was for the Japanese market, and then they just got sent over here, and it's like, hey, play it if you want, if not, we don't really care.
Exactly.
You know? And so... This is it.
Exactly. And so to get the kind of backstory, but I have a feeling it's going to be so convoluted that, I mean, I'm going to need, like, a dissertation from a PhD to understand it. Like, but you know what this does? It actually puts us one step closer to Kingdom Hearts 3. Because this is just another notch off the list before they make it. And I've heard the deep internet rumors that it is being made. But you know what? Like, if I could get Kingdom Hearts 3, then that'd be awesome. Speaking about...
That's what I'm super excited for.
Kingdom Hearts was the ultimate game where I saw that, and I thought, it's the perfect thing with Scott Pilgrim, too. Because I saw that trailer for Scott Pilgrim, and it looked awful. I thought, what is this crap that they're putting out? And then same thing with Kingdom Hearts. I see the game trailer for it, and I'm like, seriously, Final Fantasy? You're selling out to Disney? This is embarrassing. How could they ever put their name on a game like this? And then I pick it up, just like I did, and I went and saw Scott Pilgrim vs. World, and now it's one of my favorite games, and then that's one of my favorite movies, you know?
Yeah, so let's hope that they don't sandbag it too much, and they really get the ball rolling and get it over here to the U.S. Another game that's kind of got everybody scratching their heads about is Versus 13, because it was canceled and then not canceled, and it was confirmed so long ago. It's been in development for like 10 plus years or something like that. It's ridiculous.
I think that what is going to end up happening is it was originally announced for the PS2, developed for the PS3, and then released for the PS4. I bet you that's what's going
to
end up happening.
It's possible. It's supposed to be released, I think, like late this year, like Christmas time.
So, you know? I mean, doesn't this just make sense? A reboot on Final Fantasy with the new PS4 to start the new system. That just makes sense. You know, like, kind of like in the last week's podcast, we were talking about the Super Bowl, and I said the Ravens were going to win, and they did. You know, not bragging or anything. But when you just say things out loud, it just makes sense. A new Final Fantasy for a new PS3, and that's kind of one of the big hallmarks of a PlayStation, is the Final Fantasy series.
Yeah, I just hope that it doesn't get pushed to the side, because this is the one game that I've been waiting for, because it's the same game mechanics as like Kingdom Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited for it, and I really hope it doesn't get canned. And if it is, if they're not working on it, I just wish they'd come out and say, hey, you know what? This didn't go like we thought, and so we're not going to do it.
Or just rename it, because, like, it's Versus 13 right now, right? So it's still set in the same world as 13, which kind of disappoints me, because I'm getting sick of it. That we're going to have, like, 6 games released in this world that I don't find interesting at all. Release 16 or 15. Like, we already have 14 right now. Just release Final Fantasy 15. Like, you can use the same mechanics as Kingdom Hearts, just dump new characters, new storylines, and have that released in the fall, or in the winter with the PS4.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens there. Now, one game we did enjoy that most people probably have not played, or a lot of people haven't heard of, or have only heard bad things, is Lord of the Rings War of the North. Now, what are your feelings about this one?
Yeah, we're going to kind of bring this up, because it's a game that came out, I think, last year or 2011, that, I mean, a lot of gamers that I talked to never played it. It's kind of got that stigma of a Lord of the Rings game, which a lot of them aren't very good. But this is a game to me that was swept under the rug, and I think people should know about it. I mean, I think you could probably get it at GameStop for under $20 without a doubt. But me and you, I got it from a Gamefly, and me and you played it all the way through in like one sitting. Like, and it's not a perfect game by any means, but it is really, really, really fun.
Yeah, it's still a little bit confusing to me, because like you would look at the world map, and it seemed like there were so many more places to go, but you just stayed in like one little tiny section of the map. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was we were doing something wrong or what. I mean, we played through it and we beat the final boss. But
do you think that it could have been planned as DLC, and then with how poorly the sales or whatever did, they just scrapped it?
I mean, it's absolutely possible. It was just awkward how it had so many points on the map, but you couldn't go to any of the points. I don't know, even today, thinking back to it, because I know we tried everything to get to these points, and like it's like, were we idiots and just couldn't figure out what to do or something? But we tried everything. It just, that was my one real gripe about the game, was that I was confused about that. But gameplay-wise, I thought it was fun. We had a blast, and it's absolutely more fun playing with two people than it is
it's
one.
It's definitely one of those party-ish games, maybe in the vein of like a Marvel Ultimate Alliance. It's a newer school top three-quarter view down game, which I personally love. So it's kind of like the Champions of Norrath or the Baldur's Gate games, where it's kind of like that, and you pick a class and you stick with it, and it's kind of like a loot dungeon game. and each class has its own role and can do special things to discover special loot, and then you just hack and slash your way through it, and it's really, really fun. Just because, like, you're with a buddy, and you're hacking and slashing, and it kind of has, like, a Borderlands element of, like, running to grab loot, and then you can share stuff. And then, because only me and you played it, there's a whole third character that we just neglected, and then all of a sudden we started dumping loot into them, and they were really good.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a fun game, and one that, you know, would I revisit? Yeah, I probably would. I might play it again and just maybe try to see what was going on with that map one more time, you know, exactly. Just to really put that to rest. And like you said, play with that other character, because you were the ranger and I was the dwarf. And what was the other character?
It was like an elf, but she was like a wizard kind of thing. She like had a
staff. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and, you know, it was definitely a fun game that got overlooked. I mean, the story was relatively strong.
I mean, it had to do with, like, you were part of Aragorn's ranger group, and you were flanking in the north while everything that's kind of going on in the Lord of the Rings series.
And it just kind of fills in some blanks, you know? Yeah. I mean,
like, it was just...
And even if you're not into Lord of the Rings, it's still a fun game.
It's just a hack and slash game, and you cannot pay attention to the story. Like, it's just fun. Like, but once you unlock the eagles in the game, I thought you kind of get a little overpowered, because if you ever just get in real trouble, just boom, throw down an eagle, and, you know, it kills everything that's in the wake, you know?
Sure, and we were playing the game on just, you know, normal difficulty or whatever, so I'm sure we could have upped that, and, you know, then the eagles, how overpowered are they then, you know? Not much, probably, so...
And kind of expanding on your map theory, like, we didn't even get, I think, halfway through the level cap, and we finished the game, so it's like, that's kind of very confusing, you know, like, I still had a lot of skills to unlock in my tree that I never got to see because we blew through the game so quickly. So, I mean, maybe they really did plan some DLCs, and maybe if we revisited, there'd be a ton of DLC map content out there, but... I just would say, if you're looking for a real good buddy game that you and your friend have like a really long weekend to play over, get it, make some broccoli cheese soup like we did, and then just hammer your way through it, because you will laugh and have a good time playing your way through it.
Absolutely. I highly recommend you play through it. If you play the first few minutes, then you definitely know it's not your cup of tea. But it's worth a play. It's not as bad as everyone says it is. I really enjoyed it. It's Lord of the Rings, War of the North. So,
I kind of think it suffers from that same thing like a lot of Star Wars games do. And people just see Lord of the Rings attached to it, and they put such ungodly expectations on it that whatever it comes out as, it's not going to meet their expectations. So,
yeah, bingo. So, definitely don't judge a book by its cover is pretty much what we're saying here. So, I think that's pretty much it for today's podcast. You know, next week we're going to go ahead and talk about some movies,
TV shows,
Netflix series, you know, all that sort of fun stuff. So if you're into that, come back next week. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you guys. Like I said, if you need to contact us or have any ideas or anything for us at all, go ahead and email us at a2zpodcast@gmail.com. Spread the words to your friends. Just type a2z into the search bar on iTunes. It pulls us right up. You download our episodes right away. It's super simple. So please, please do that for us, guys. We'd appreciate it.
Also, if you guys want to throw up a review, even if it's critical, on the iTunes review section, we'd greatly appreciate it. We'll take constructive criticism, no problem. So go ahead and throw that up there. We'd appreciate it. You got anything else?
No, just like you said, any constructive criticism, please lay it on us. We'd appreciate it. You know, we're just doing this pretty much for fun, but we're kind of taking it a little bit serious too. So any ideas or anything you guys have, we'd greatly appreciate. So thanks again, guys. I'm A.
And I'm Z.
And we'll see you guys later.